Focusing your attention upon the heart center. Feel there a radiant, warm light. And notice your breathing, the rhythm of your breath, how deep or how shallow, how complete or incomplete it is. Without trying to make any changes or modifications, just simply notice that there's a continual ebb and flow of the tide of your own breath. And behind your breath is that glowing light. It is in the center of your chest area. And as you focus upon that glow of light, see it increasing so that its radiance goes out throughout your body. And you feel it as a warm glow of inner joy. Go on increasing it until it fills out all around your body in an aura of glow, gold. All the while you're breathing. And then if you dare, expand that golden light out until it fills this entire room and all the people in it, and that you identify yourself with the room itself, and that the room itself is breathing in concert with your own breath. And you feel the freedom of being beyond your own body consciousness. You notice that to be identified with the room is something that is not unfamiliar to you. Rather, it is easy, although it may startle the mind at first that it is so easy. Then to go on expanding that light until you feel that the earth and the atmosphere and the aura of the earth is also your body, and that it is also breathing in concert and in rhythm with your own breath. And you look upon the earth as something that you love. Not because there's anything particular about the earth, but because your nature itself is a feeling of warm love and positive regard. And you see the earth and its atmosphere and its aura all filled with that golden light. And you just notice how you feel, identified with this larger body. And then to expand out even further, out into all space. If you wish, out to the universe itself, and you feel this universe itself, all of its galaxies, all of its solar systems, everything within it is a part of you, and you are a part of it. and you feel a radiant glow at the center of that universe, which is now your heart. And the universe itself breathes with you. And it doesn't feel all that unusual. Something anciently familiar. And then you can focus again on this tiny little physical body. Become aware of it and just see how small it feels. You can open your eyes and see your hands. Just notice how small it all is. Then close your eyes and go into that great expanse once again. And even beyond this universe. So that you might see island universes all within your body. Sense there the great feeling of freedom as your spirit identifies with your larger body. And that no matter how large you make your mind, you easily accommodate it. And you feel that that new expanse is now comfortably you. When you look at your body and the concerns of your body and the things that normally take up your day, they may feel small to you in comparison to this vast body. You were born to learn about this vast body. Great spiritual master Lahari had the title Mahasya or Mahasya, and it means large or cosmic minded. He easily identified with the universal consciousness, just as you may learn too. I would like to read from Paramahansa Yogananda's commentary on the Christian scriptures, titled The Second Coming of Christ, The Resurrection of Christ Within You. And quoting from the prophet Isaiah, "The Lord himself shall give you a sign. Behold, a virgin shall be conceived and bear a son, and shall call his name Emmanuel. My servant shall deal prudently. He shall be exalted and extolled and be very high. So shall he sprinkle many nations. All we, like sheep, have gone astray. We have turned every one to his own way. And the Lord hath laid on him the iniquity of us all. He was taken from prison and from judgment. He was cut off from the land of the living, for the transgressions of my people was he stricken. He bare the sin of many and made intercession for the transgressors." The commentary: divine intercession to mitigate the cosmic law of cause and effect, by which a man suffers from his errors, was at the heart of the mission of love Jesus came to fulfill. Moses brought the law from man to God, from God to man, emphasizing the awful justice that befalls willful heedlessness. Jesus came to demonstrate the forgiveness and compassion of God, whose love is a shelter even from the exacting law. Similarly, Jesus was preceded by Gautama Buddha, the Enlightened One, whose incarnation reminded a forgetful generation of the Dharma Chakra, the ever-rotating wheel of karma, self-initiated action, and its effects, which make each man, and not a cosmic dictator, responsible for his own present condition. Buddha brought heart back into the arid theology and mechanical rituals, into the ancient Vedic religion of India, which had fallen after the passing of a higher age in which Bhagavan Krishna, India's most beloved of avatars, preached the way of divine love and God realization through the practice of the supreme spiritual science of yoga, union with God. Greater love hath no man than this, that a man shall lay down his life for his friends. Such was the exceptional mission shouldered by Jesus. Intercession by intimates of God is the palliative elixir that gives a weakened mortal the necessary strength to rise and conquer the forces of cosmic law he has roused against himself by disobedient behavior. The interceder stands with the devotee, offering him defense in the form of impermeable wisdom, and sometimes deflecting unto himself a portion of a devastating onslaught. Jesus came in a darkened age that had little able to appreciate him, but his message of love of God and his intercession on behalf of suffering humanity was not only for that time, but for all ages to come. That God is with man in his darkest moments as well as enlightened times. He reminded a world fearful of their creator as a God of wrathful judgment that, though God is a spirit and that they worship him, must worship him in spirit and in truth. The Absolute is a personal God who can be appealed to in prayer and who responds as a loving Heavenly Father. To understand the magnitude of a divine incarnation, it is necessary to understand the source and nature of the consciousness that is incarnate in the avatar. Jesus spoke of this consciousness when he proclaimed, "I and my Father are one," and "I am in the Father, and the Father in me." Those who unite their consciousness to God know both the transcendent and the immanent nature of spirit. The singularity of the ever-existing, ever-conscious, ever-new bliss of the uncreate absolute and the myriad manifestations of his being is the finite of forms into which he variegates himself into a panorama of creation. So here Yogananda is speaking about Jesus as an avatar. An avatar is a concept that comes from the East, and it means descent of spirit into flesh. Most souls born into this world come because they have some past association with this world. The law of cause and effect, the law of karma, is in action in everyone's lives. Simple examples of this can be that if you eat certain kinds of food, certain amounts of those foods, then you will naturally gain weight. There is cause and there is effect. If, on the other hand, you take up a regimen of exercise and you begin to eat a little bit less, you will lose weight. Again, the law of cause and effect. If you were to step off of the roof of a tall building, gravity will take over and pull you all the way down to the ground. Cause and effect, and so on. It is an operation in our life in a physical way, also in a mental, emotional way, as well as a spiritual way. We are all the products of our past behavior that has brought into effect all the things that we see in our life. Each person's life is perfectly constructed for them. Now, if we don't like our life and we don't like the effects that we're receiving now, then we have only to look to ourselves for the solution. Because it is only by changing our behavior that we will rid ourselves of the effects that we are now suffering from. This is true for every person who's come into this earth. Now, a great avatar such as Jesus comes to this worldly plane not to be one who lords it over the rest of us and proclaims that I am the one and only one, and that you must all worship and bend down your knee to me. But rather, they come as an example. I am the way, the truth, and the life, said Jesus. Now, if we are to take him at his word, that means he is the example. He also said that these things that I've done in references to miracles and attainments, you may do also, and greater things than this. How can you interpret that in any other way than you are to rise up into that same state of consciousness that he existed in, that you may do what he did, and greater things than that? Only a spiritual master may have attributes that are as great or greater than Jesus had himself. This is the great mistake that has entered into Christian theology down through the centuries. In the beginning, the teachings were there, and the purity of the teachings were there, but those purity of teachings can only exist to the degree that those minds and souls who receive those teachings can incorporate them into their own consciousness. And so it is inevitable that through time, errors, omissions, and deletions, and insertions of new teachings will enter in. And unless those souls have attained the same state of consciousness as Jesus, then those things will not reflect the highest consciousness that Jesus represented. Therefore, we can only look at the results of thousands of years of inferior consciousness interpreting the words and the actions of the Master. This happened to Buddha, it happens to Krishna, it happens to all who come upon this earth, that we don't have their direct teachings, their direct words. And even with Yogananda, who came and wrote so much and whose words I'm reading here, have been heavily edited by others. And as a result of that, his words have been changed. Now, it is an irrefutable fact that the teachings of Jesus carry with them a tremendous power. Otherwise, there would not be the thousands and millions and thousands of millions of followers that have got inspiration for their lives through these teachings. And so you can say that there is a tremendous spiritual force that are still in these words and these teachings. And it's because of this, Jesus taught from that purified, superconscious realm. Within all of us, we have the subconscious mind, the conscious mind, and the superconscious mind. Now, the subconscious mind is the repository of everything that you have said, thought, and done. And the superconscious mind is that which most perfectly reflects the divine consciousness within your consciousness. And the conscious mind are those things and those ideas that you are normally conscious of throughout the day. Now, when you dream and you have a bad dream, a nightmare, and you wake up from that, you say, oh, it was only a dream. But that nightmare represents certain dynamics within your own subconscious mind, your own fears, your own desires, those things that have remained hidden within your own subconscious mind, and most oftentimes has been blocked out of your conscious mind. When you have a superconscious dream, you feel uplifted, you feel transformed, you feel that you are dealing with divine realms, and when you wake up from that dream, you have a spiritual feeling about you. You feel uplifted. You feel attuned to whatever it is that the dream has brought you. I remembered having a dream with Mother, and in her case, like Jesus' life and what Yogananda is describing here, she took on the karma or the law of cause and effect for many of those who followed after her, as well as the world at large. That may seem like a strange thing, but there is such a thing as vicarious suffering. And you're able to help others in this way by taking on the effects of physical karma within your own body. And Mother had a long lifetime of doing this. And in this dream, I was sitting and I was talking with Mother. And she apparently was feeling the effects of carrying a very heavy load because she wasn't quite as lively and jovial as I was used to seeing her. And I remember having it run through my mind, oh, I wish that she were just feeling a little bit lighter, a little livelier, a little more fun to be with. And gradually, as I sat and I spoke with her, I felt increasingly awful. I felt a tremendous pressure and a pain come upon this body. And as the pain got worse and worse on my own body, Mother got lighter and she began to laugh and she began to have quite a fun time of it. And I felt like I was being crushed. But I tried not to show it because I wanted to please her and I didn't want to stop the interaction that we were having. And finally, I got to the point where I didn't think that I could take it anymore. And then that crushed, painful feeling started to lift from me. And the more it lifted from me, the more Mother's face took on a stern kind of look. And I realized that she, in response to my own thought, my own lack of respect, my own lack of gratitude, my own lack of understanding for what she was carrying, and I had been so careless about, that she had given me just even a portion of what it was that she was carrying. And it practically crushed me. It was of such great weight and pain. And now I had a renewed sense of gratitude and love for everything that she was doing. But she didn't advertise it. She didn't usually talk about it. And so there were those who didn't know or didn't fully comprehend. And you can't comprehend when you haven't had that experience. But that was the end of the dream at that point. And it was a wonderful dream, even though it was a painful, difficult lesson that I learned. And when I woke up from that dream, I felt tremendous. I felt such a light. I felt so much uplifted in spirit because that was a true dream, a superconscious dream, and that I knew it. And even as I recounted it to you, I could perfectly recall being in Mother's presence and going through that dream state. It stayed with me, and the feelings have stayed with me as well. And so we all have access to the superconscious mind, but most people don't take any advantage of it. It is the next evolutionary step for mankind. We have evolved from a lower animal state. We started out in this incarnations, life of incarnations, on the most basic and elementary levels. Mother said that she one time saw her very first incarnation both the Buddha and the Krishna, said, "I recall all my incarnations, but you do not." And Mother remembered that very first time, and she was a dewdrop on a leaf with the light shining through that dewdrop, and that was her very first incarnation. And so we start out on those more elemental levels, on the mineral level, on the basic element level. And we feel what it is like to be in this earth. We feel what it is like to be the element of water or of air as it moves around this earth. And we do this because we want to have that experience. We want to know what that is like. Can you imagine being the air and being a breeze that moves through that air? You pass through the trees and over flowers and over grass. Can you imagine the wonderful feeling of freedom that comes through being a part of that movement of air that goes all around this world? I heard an amazing thing one time, and it said this, that the particles of air that Jesus breathed after he expired, those breaths, those particles went out all around this earth. And that in actuality, through our own breathing, we have all breathed some of those particles that Jesus breathed. Isn't that an amazing thing? And could you imagine being a particle like that that spread all over this earth? Could you imagine being a particle of breath that was breathed in by Jesus or by Buddha or by Krishna? It's a wonderful thought. And then we want to experience something greater. So we move into the vegetable kingdom, some kind of plant life, because that's the next stage of evolution. And we explore and experience what it is to take on the life of a living plant. And it sounds like an odd thing, perhaps, but could you imagine being a tree and what that life would be like for you? And feeling rooted into the ground and rising up toward the light. Now, when you are sensitive, psychically or spiritually, you can actually sense living forces within nature, within a tree or within a mountain, or within different aspects, or you can walk into a certain area, a glade in the forest, for instance, and you feel a shift of atmosphere, and you feel a shift of vibration. And you know that you're experiencing something of nature, a presence. And if you move away from that area, that feeling changes. If you move back to it, it's recreated again. There are some places that have negativity associated with it. I once was in a park that used to be part of a seminary in the Seattle area. And there's a outdoor altar that's there. And as I was walking towards this altar area, I felt a tremendous psychic wall erect itself in front of me. And I could feel it as certainly as you could feel a physical wall. And it had a ominous, dark feeling to it. And what I saw through my own mental intuition was that there were Satan-worshipping type groups that used this outdoor altar that now exists part of as a park for some of their rituals. And I could feel the negative, evil vibration that was left over from these rituals. And so as I backed up, I experimented, and as I moved away from it, I felt a relief from that vibration. As I moved back towards it again, there it was once again. And I could feel it all the way around the perimeter that had been set up through this incantation that had been done at this place. And so through this, we learn that whatever we do, whatever we say, whatever we put into action has a vibratory expression to it. And it either creates something positive or something negative. There's very little, if anything, that's neutral. It's either positive or it's negative. It either builds something that is good, or it tears away at something and creates something that is negative and dark. You can sense that, say, in a tavern, a place where people go during the day and they aren't drinking to have fun, they're drinking to get drunk. And you look in at that place and you feel the nature of that place and you can feel the vibration of that place. It has a very different feel to it than a place where people are more open, more light, more vibrant. Everything has a vibration like that. And it really makes you think about the actions that you take, about the kind of life that you live. There are many people who live their lives as if there is no consequence to them. But this is not true. It is definitely not true. When there are people who live lives and do things that leave a negative vibration to it, it brings this world down. And in the opposite mode, when you live a hero's life, when you live a life attuned to goodness, to light, to harmony, to strength, it helps lift this world up. Now, there are many, many people who live this life as if their lives are inconsequential. What does it matter what I do? I do what I like to do because I want to do that. And no one has a right to tell me to do otherwise. So they say. But their lives too go out and affect the greater whole of this creation. And you may not like it. And you may not like to hear it, but it is a fact. And unless we begin to take our lives a bit more seriously and really think about the words that we say when people are involved in malicious gossip, and it's something that's meant to tear people down, that's not just a neutral thing, that has a destructive effect upon this world. People's feelings are hurt. People's reputations can be ruined. People's futures and their lives can be affected. It is important to realize that we must think positive, that we must be careful about the things we choose to do. We must be creating something that is good, something that is healthy, something that is strong, something that is of the light, a life that is of the light. And when we do that, we bring ourselves into closer harmony with the great spiritual masters who have lived upon this earth. We bring ourselves into greater harmony with Jesus, with Buddha, with Krishna, with the great masters. And we think, from an ego standpoint, that perhaps we're going to lose out on something if we choose to live a life like that. But the truth is, we don't lose out on one thing. Rather, we gain access to everything that is good, everything that is lovely, everything that is of good report. It is time and past time that we begin to take our lives a bit more seriously, to really ask the question, what am I born for? Is it just to eat, to play, to do the things that I want to do day by day, and then one day die? Is that it? Is that everything? Or was I born for more? Do I know deep down inside, if I introspect just a little bit, do I know that there's something more to my life? Something greater that I'm being called upon for? Something deeper? Something of more profundity than just living my life for the day? We must ask ourselves these kinds of questions. We must make that kind of inquiry. And it is not far away from you. It is right within your own consciousness. You do not need to consult other books or other people. You need only consult yourself, your deeper self, your greater awareness. It is very easy to get lost in the details of this life and completely forget the greater purpose for which you came. I've told the story before, but once when I was in meditation and I had a spontaneous memory of a previous lifetime. Now, many people don't have any memories of previous lifetimes, but that should not seem too unusual because most people don't have much of a memory of before the age of 6 or 7, just perhaps fragment memories. And perhaps you've had fragment memories of other lifetimes, but you've discounted them. But I had this spontaneous memory of this lifetime, and it was the end of that lifetime, and I breathed my last. And as I did so, I rose up in consciousness, and I looked back over my life, and I thought to myself, I forgot once again. I forgot why I had come. I lived an okay kind of a life, but I really wanted to make spiritual progress in this lifetime. And I got so caught up with the little things, details of this life, that I lost it. I wasted that lifetime. That's how it felt to me as I reflected back over that lifetime. And it created in me a keen sense of determination not to forget again, to remember, to bring back to my consciousness again and again and again why I have truly taken incarnation, why I have truly come. And it takes that kind of remembrance because old habits takes over and pulls us back into this world again. But I implore you to take a little bit of time. Make an inquiry of yourself. Why have you really come? Certainly, there are good things to achieve in achieving a profession, or in having a family, or raising children, in creating a good social climate, in trying to do something to improve this world. All of these are good things. But do they speak to the deepest truths within your own soul? What will make you happy when you leave this body and you look back over this time on this earth? What will make you feel most deeply satisfied about being here? It's an important question. An essential question to ask of yourself, because that will be your guide. It will be your star that you will be able to attach to and guide your life more surely by, so that when you do come to leaving this life and you look back over this life, that you will look with keen appreciation and you will be able to say, it is good. It is good. Draw inspiration from these great avatars. Have a keen appreciation for your life. Have thanksgiving and gratitude for the good things that have been granted to you. And do not forget to give full expression to the deeper things of your own life. Your soul will reveal those things to you if you will but openly and earnestly make the inquiry. Live your life in such a way that when you breathe the last, your last breath, you will be able to say with a full heart, it is good. It is good, and you will be able to release your consciousness into the all consciousness. And it will not feel to you like you're going anywhere. You will feel like you are arriving home and that you have always been there. It will feel so natural and so right to you without any fear and without, most importantly, any regrets. Shall we close with some melodious ohms? Amen. I bow to the light within you. Thank you for coming and happy Thanksgiving. A good habit to have is each evening as you lay your head down before you go to sleep, think of at least three things you truly feel grateful for in your life. Cultivate that as a habit to always be thinking of the things that you have gratitude for. I think you'll find that it will produce a very positive frame of mind, and it's a good antidote for depression.